Welcome to the Moses Organic Farming Podcast. This is Chuck from Moses. All right, welcome back for part two with Kef Raku and Angela Dawson from 40 Acre Co-op and Kelly Maynard from the UW Center for Cooperatives. In part two, we explore cooperative principles 5 through 7, education and training, cooperation among cooperatives, and concern for community. We also delve into some of the particular issues around systemic racism, mass incarceration and its connection to cannabis, and Angela and Kef's overall vision for 40 Acre Co-op and for black farmers in general. Let's get to it.
Principle 5, education and training, you've touched on this a lot. People who study co-ops all around the world have found that cooperatives that really embrace education and training for their members, their boards, and their community are more likely to be successful over time. So are there additional ways you want to mention that you're incorporating education and training into the DNA of 40 Acre?
Just briefly, I can just touch as a member. One thing that attracted me was the entire focus on training, particularly training in the form of mentorship and apprenticeship. I think that's an effective way of getting a tactile, experiential type of model for learning. And that is the crux. I mean, we have a saying, you know, if you know better, you do better. And I think that Angela has done a fine job of attracting members that are like-minded in that and wanting to receive training, but also community members that are experienced, that are willing to take people underneath their wings, share their expertise and share knowledge, which is extremely valuable. So
that's a good point, Kef. And I'll also say that for us, like right now, learning from 2020, right? So we're at the end of 2020 now. And, you know, this is our first startup year. We collected a lot of valuable input and data from members about what their training needs were. We had a survey that went out in September as we were building up our HIP program to ask specifically what members needed around education. And the answers were pretty consistent. So I'll say for us, what I learned from, you know, the member input and the weekly field Zoom calls that we had was that for us, the education principle is right now like number one, because of the lack of investment in the capacity of Black farmers over the years, I cannot overstate the need and that gap. You know, it almost reminds me of the educational gap. I'm not an educator, but I had children in school, and you always hear about the gap, the educational gap for Black students. And I'll say that it's 10 times worse for Black farmers because they weren't even integrated in the same building like Black students were in school. So Black farming has been very vastly segregated for a very long time. We never got the Brown versus Board Education type of law that had to force any kind of integration with Black farmers. So they basically have been operating on their own little island for a while the rest of the agricultural economy got these investments in technical assistance and technology and new software and new genetics and all the stuff that comes with education and training, right? So I feel like, you know, the 40 Acre Co-op has a strong need for education in all kinds of areas. We decided that we're just going to take it, you know, element by element and try to, you know, address the needs as we can. We do rely on partners, quite frankly, to help us with this because of the demand and the need is so vast and so diverse. We have education around specific technical things like how to operate equipment, certain kinds of grow equipment. And then we have just education around, you know, what is the co-op model today and how do we figure out, you know, equity and how do we figure out control and voting and how much power people have. And then we have the education just simply around agriculture and growing and what to use and what not to use. And so we try to put it in those main three buckets. There's, you know, then there's the whole business side that we haven't had a chance to address. So it's important for us. We're trying to get better at it. We have challenges around COVID because, you know, we're also doing it by video conference. And so we're trying to make it as engaging as we possibly can when we can't go to the farm and specifically teach. We're using headgear, head cameras, we're using simulators. We're trying to be creative about it, but it is a specific challenge. And I do want people to acknowledge and be aware that, you know, education is a loaded word and it means different things for different communities. And our co-op structure, it means a lot.
Angela, when you and I spoke a little while ago, you mentioned that at least some of the members in 40 Acre are Black veterans, and that there was, with the training you were doing, a trauma-informed lens, and that how important it was to not try to work around that or avoid that. Is there anything else you can share about that in your training?
Yeah, so there is a lot of, again, a lot of research that we did during the 2020 season as we met with farmers and we had the Zoom calls and we had conversations. And even we had a lot of meetings and just, you know, from my observation of watching farmers, I do observe farmers, interaction with each other, interaction with the co-op. It's very clear that Black farmers and Black people in particular have a unique economic traumatic experience with the United States capitalist system. And it is different than other communities in terms of the way that we were introduced to farming here and the way that we were introduced to the economic system here, right? And so you can hear, especially in farmers and what we call foundational farmers. So we have me, I'm a fourth generational farmer. My father was a farmer, his father and his father were farmers. And I consider those men foundational farmers. But then they also have the foundational farmers who are still in the South. And those are farmers who were part of the original Pickford versus Glickman class action settlement, where those specific foundational farmers decided to come together in a class to sue the USDA for the 30 or 40 years of specific discrimination against them when they tried to get resources for their farm. So that kind of, if you ever look at any of the reports from the congressional reports or any of the stories from the Pickford versus Glickman settlement and those foundational farmers, I deal with a lot of their grandchildren and their nieces and nephews that are still trying to hold on to their farm. There's trauma there. So, and we're not even talking about the veteran war kind of trauma. We're talking about economic and financial trauma. When you hear the stories of these foundational farmers and what they have dealt with the USDA and in these rural communities, how they're treated, it would be really remiss upon us to just act like we're sitting here together now and singing Kumbaya and growing tomatoes. This is not what's happening. These farmers are still have serious health issues and have had lack of access, who are operating with dangerous equipment, that are using low quality products, that are doing twice the work and coming out with half of the yield and production. And so that's trauma to me. And you can hear it through, you know, and it might come out through different ways. But for me, it was really important for us to set out our training and our education to address and acknowledge what we're dealing with, so that by the time we get to this conversation of how we're going to disperse economic resources for the co-op, we're doing it with an informed lens. We know what we're talking about. We know what we're dealing with. We know where the gaps are. We know where the pain is. We know where stuff has been unprocessed. We know, you know, where the disease is, basically. And so we're having this conversation being informed of where we stand. And we are using a certified therapist for this conversation. He does work specifically on financial trauma. And we think that this is a real thing that we have to address before we start talking about how to be a millionaire in cannabis. You know, we just feel like you can't start talking about how to be, you know, handle a cash crop that can potentially make you a millionaire. And you've got all this unresolved trauma around economic oppression that came from your parents and your grandparents and your family, and how are you guys going to deal with that in this context? And so it's such an important conversation. And that's why I love my job. And I love being a part of the co-op, because there's no other place that I would be able to bring up this conversation and have it be valid. And so that's what's so important about the uniqueness of this model and how we can apply it to our needs.
In co-op world, we often talk about principle six, or P6, which is cooperation among cooperatives. Can you talk a little more about how 40 Acre is collaborating with other entities, including cooperatives?
Sure. Yeah. It's, you know, of course we have, Kef is a great example here, where not only is he, you know, a leader in his own community, he's a grower, he's interested in perfecting his growing skills and learning more about agriculture and educating himself so that he can bring people through his organization and help give them some of that capacity building as well. And so that's a really good example. But, you know, we are members of other co-ops. I personally am probably a member of six other cooperatives, food co-ops, you know, REI, outdoor co-ops, different kinds of co-ops I'm a member of. But specifically with partnering with 40 Acre, we are interested in partnering with other organizations who are aligned with our mission and our vision to address the equity gap for socially disadvantaged farmers in agriculture. And so we have partners like our technical grow partners. Most people, I will say, are not as comfortable with the co-op model. So I'd say of all of our partnerships, we probably have about three co-ops that we actively engage with at 40 Acre. The rest of them are different kinds of businesses, either LLCs or nonprofits or other for-profit entities. But I want 40 Acre Co-op to, you know, my hope, eventually, after we get through sort of the muck and mire of getting started and weeding out people who don't have the best intentions for the co-op or for Black farmers, is that we end up being a best practices example of how to organize a co-op in marginalized communities, right? So that's my hope. I don't know if I'm there yet. I honestly can't say that I feel like we're there yet. I feel like we have to recruit some more good people like Kef. And I feel like more, you know, having more conversations like this on podcasts and getting our messages out. We're going to be doing some rebranding soon. We're doing some, you know, some other video and other communication and updating our website so that we can make more clearly our message around using the co-op model to build our community up. And so hopefully at some point in time, we'll be looked at as a good example of that. That's our overall goal. And we hope that we can rely on others in the cooperative community, especially in the Midwest, to help support that mission, right? So we do work with Shared Capital. That's a co-op. We also work with Start.co-op, is a co-op accelerator. And we were a part of their cohort this year. We got a lot of training and education, and we worked with six other co-ops that were in the cohort. So we all worked together. I got some great camaraderie from those co-ops, and they were different. We had a finance co-op. We had an HR co-op. We had a Tempe co-op, and we had a housing developer co-op. So we were the only agricultural co-op in that group, but we found a lot of camaraderie just with people being able to help support us in these principles that you're talking about, Kelly, like really kind of delve into some of our structural foundational messages around how we fit into the co-op community. Because we're so different and because we're trying new things, we still want to be able to have the support from other co-ops and be able to join in the rest of the co-op movement of being a good example of community building using this model.
So our seventh and final principle, concern for community, is often a driving force for the creation of co-ops. When I hear this and talking to a lot of different cooperators, when they give kind of the origin story, at the root of it was trying to address a community need, a community issue. And you've both talked about this a lot. Big picture, are there other ways that concern for community, all kinds of community played a role in development of the co-op. You know, looking forward, how is the co-op working to serve the community now and in the future?
Yeah, so my organization, it is a community collaborative community development institution. Our goal is to do a great deal of outreach because there is a strong demand within North Minneapolis communities, East St. Paul communities, and the surrounding suburbs for access to either quality food sources or just the overall interest in agricultural production and development. So with us being a collaborative institution, we're constantly having our ear close to the communities, finding those other like organizations, community development organizations that have an interest in agricultural development and agricultural literacy, as well as other influencers that would be able to help evangelize and spread the word. So it's certainly community is a focus. And as Angela has addressed, there's been a strong outcry due to a lot of the injustices centered around agricultural enterprises and our communities. And so it's kind of the cornerstone of why we exist.
Yeah, and I'll just say concern for community. So we, you know, 40 Acre Cooperative's founding is, you know, obviously based on our concern specifically for Black farmers and their lack of opportunities in agriculture, in the marketplace, and obviously in their sort of complex relationship with the USDA. And so, you know, that's sort of the big picture concern, but there's a lot of other concerns that we have, and it's sort of intertwined in all of our strategies in the DNA of the co-op. And one of them that I would, you know, like to eventually highlight a little more once we kind of get our foundational footing a little stronger in 2021, I really want us to be at the leadership of addressing environmental degradation and climate change. One of the things that we know very clearly from, you know, some of the boards and some of the committees that I participate on now in Minnesota is that agriculture is one of the greatest contributors to climate change and greenhouse gases. And it's mostly because of the way that agriculture is structured and the model that is used, which, you know, the model for agriculture is a problem for many reasons. We focus mostly on the sort of discrimination and the exclusionary way that the model has damaged Black farmers. But we also are, you know, we're disrupting this model for several reasons, not because it's just bad for Black farmers, but it's also bad for the environment. And it's bad economically. White independent farmers aren't doing that well either. So, you know, we feel like the entire model, even though we're focused in addressing the inequities that have affected Black farmers, it's affecting everybody the way that agriculture is set up. And it needs to be disrupted for many reasons. But specifically around the environmental concern, we feel like most Black farmers, honestly, have originally been regenerative farmers. We know that a lot of the innovations in agriculture were born by Black farmers, like the corn planter and the seed planter, and, you know, a lot of the innovations that we use now in milling and peanuts and cotton. There, a lot of those efficiencies were found, and even most notably, the agricultural extension system was invented by Carter G. Woodson. And so we feel like within the 40 Acre Co-op, our concern for the environmental aspects of our community should also be front and center. And that's one of the benefits of the hemp plant, is because it is such a regenerative plant, and that it does even clean toxins from soil, and that it has so many other benefits. It's better than trees. It's better than plastic. It has so many applications that are less harmful to the environment. But we also need to talk about our growing practices, right? And so we don't want to create, you know, as we're addressing the wealth gap, we also want to address the issue around the environmental damage. And so that's an important part of our work. I hope that we can focus on it a little more. We are using regenerative practices in our own growing. So for example, you know, we're looking at solar for heating and cooling our greenhouses, and we look at regenerative practices with some of our livestock and our animal for fertilizing the soil rather than using chemicals. We're very intentional about testing for quality in the soil and the water, and not using chemicals to treat when we do have problems in our crops. And so we'd like to bring regenerative farming back to agriculture as we're building up our farmer membership base. It's a really important part of our concern for community.
Now for a quick break. Registration is now open for Growing Stronger, a collaborative conference on organic and sustainable farming. The conference will be held from February 22nd through the 27th, 2021. We are partnering with several other events, including the Grassworks Conference, the O-Grain Conference, the Midwest Organic Pork Conference, and the Organic Vegetable Production Conference to create this 5-in-1 virtual conference. Scholarships are available for farmers and student groups. Go to bit.ly/growingstronger2021 to check out the lineup of speakers and activities and to get your ticket. Now, on to part two.
For farmers and food producers listening to the podcast and maybe considering building a cooperative, are there any final words either of you would want to share from your experience so far?
You know, as someone new to this business model, I find that it's a great vehicle for, in a sense, having a bootstrap system for getting started. I find that it's been a great experience so far, just watching close up with 40 Acre Co-op, being able to have others rally around them. We rally around a cause. Everyone has a similar value system. And it's cool to see this value system mobilize and become an enterprise. So I say that it's perfect for individuals that are looking to get started, that have community, that have an idea, that have a vision that's likened amongst them, to be able to get started and to have movement in creating their enterprise.
Yeah, and I'd like to just add that, people who are interested in building a co-op, I'd say if you're interested in it and it keeps nagging you, do it, but do it with some thought and get some mentors. You can join the co-op. We do encourage people to cooperate on many levels. And it's kind of a tricky challenge, but the way that we're organizing so far is that, so even though we do produce our own high quality plants, we don't compete with our members. And it's mostly that our members have different interests in the farming space. And so far, we've done a really good job of working with our members to both enhance their own businesses and also enhance our business. And so find a group that's interested in your growth and development, that is concerned about what you're concerned about, and find people who can align with the vision and the mission of the problem that you want to solve. Do your research. Get the right mentors. There's so many in Minnesota and Wisconsin. And then I also want to say that, and the co-op is also a resource. And we're going to be better at putting sort of culturally specific co-op information and sharing that through our social media and our websites. You know, it's really great for a lot of knowledge and information to be available. But, you know, we work with a Native tribes here in Minnesota too. And they have this thing that they do where they, you know, when they get help from other outside organizations, you know, like cooperative business building or something like that, they do what's called indigenize it, meaning that, you know, they indigenize the content to make it accessible to their community. And so that's what we're here to do, is, you know, to help make information about agriculture and growing and access to land and cooperative economics accessible to our community. And so find someone who can help you do that. And that's the best way to build the co-op that is going to be successful for you. And that is going to be a passion that you're going to want to return to even when things aren't perfect. Because one thing that I'm going to say about co-op is that I'm excited about it because it can solve a lot of problems, but it is messy and it takes longer and it requires more energy. And you have to communicate more and you have to educate more, and it requires patience and it requires self-reflection and leadership. And if you don't have the patience for any of that, you probably don't want to build a co-op, or you probably don't want to be a part of a co-op, because you have to assume that some of that is going to be part of the mix. It's a beautiful concept. It has so much power and ability to change and help people and inspire people. But it also is laborious. and it requires time. And if you're impatient and you want to get rich quick, this is probably not for you. And so that's kind of what I would say to people who are interested in building a co-op. Get with some smart people who care about what you care about and get into it. Just do it.
If people are listening to this and they're not really in the place where they could become members of your co-op, but want to support it in some way, what's a way that a listener could support the work that you're doing?
Sure. So there's a couple of different ways, and we do have community member options on our website for people to join in. And but, you know, we try to make it easy for people to give in different ways. And so we have our typical membership. And then we also just have some people who donate just through a community member at any amount. And then we also are actually, we're setting up honestly a nonprofit arm, because there is a lot of our work that is nonprofit related, right? Even though we are all about this revenue stream and hemp and cannabis, we're not like the typical hemp and cannabis company, where we have the luxury of not investing in education and training of our members. So your typical hemp company that is our competitor does not have the extra burden that we have of bringing along, you know, a marginalized community, right? And all that takes in creating some equity to help get our members up to some sort of par to what's going on in the industry. For example, being high quality producers of the plant. All of that investment that it's going to take for us to create people who can actually be high quality producers of a plant that we're going to want to buy from them and want to give to our marketplace is a lot different than what your typical investor owned hemp cannabis company is. And so we are setting up options for people to give through a nonprofit fiscal agent, so that will support the training goals that we have for our 2021 season. So we are going to have that on the website, because people have asked that of us a couple of times. So the training piece is just so important. It is expensive. I'll be honest with you. It's not cheap to figure out ways to set up the technology that can keep people engaged over a 12-week session who, you know, 65% of Black farmers don't have access to Wi-Fi. So we're trying to be really super creative. They have smartphones, but that stuff is, you know, it requires time, it requires labor, and it also requires more resources. So we do accept gifts from the community and community memberships. And then we also are creating ways for people to give through our nonprofit partnerships so that we can invest in the training of our members.
And just a side note, just to add, you know, one thing to keep in mind, I think we mentioned this at the beginning of the interview, though hemp is a cash crop and a crop of focus, that, you know, there are other things that are offered at the 40-acre co-op, such as if you have a crop of interest that you'd like to learn about growing or would like to utilize the land to grow, that's an opportunity. Or if you're interested in husbandry, you know, that's available as well. So there's a wide range of interests that can be covered via the co-op.
I just want to add that we're interested in sorghum. We are looking for 2021 and for people who are not interested in growing hemp. We do have some exotic specialty crops like elderberries and other crops that potential buyers have come to us and asked if members would be interested in growing. So we are building out other grow opportunities for members. But the careful part of it, obviously, is that we want members to be able to grow something that they can actually turn a profit on. And so we're finding that we have to find these specialty and novelty crops that are more in demand in areas, and we're creating market access for those. But we are happy to have members. You know, some members are not ready to grow, but they want to learn, right? They could take advantage of the education. I mean, the education that we offer and the aspects of growing, especially cannabis, but any plant, there is a learning curve. And so it wouldn't hurt people to, even if you're not completely, you don't have your land yet, you're not growing, you might not be ready to pay for your license yet, but you just want to, you're what we call canna curious. The canna curious is, we're curious about it. What is this industry about? What's the money about? How much can you make? What's the investment? What do I need to learn if I want to grow? That's also a way that you don't have to necessarily grow to be a part of the training or to be a member of the co-op. There's a lot of education that's going on all throughout the year. It's not just in the training program, although that's the one condensed sort of marketed program that we have a specific curriculum around. But we also have partnerships with WEI, the Women's Environmental Initiative. It's an organic farm and training center in North Branch, Minnesota. And we're partnering with them to offer hemp training to their members. And they're offering organic farming certification to our members. And then we have partnerships with another company that is a large hemp company that's interested in creating a pipeline of professionals who are ready to work in the hemp and cannabis industry full time. So we do have, you know, in addition to our hemp training, in addition to the cannabis growing, and that's our main revenue stream, yes, the seeds and the plants, but we also are very much interested in creating more farmers, right? So the overall goal, there was a million farmers in 1900, and in 2007, there was less than 40,000 Black farmers. So overall, we want to change that trajectory, right? We want to create more Black farmers in the United States. They all don't have to be growing hemp, although we think that's a great way to get into it. But you can get into it by growing whatever is most accessible to you that you feel like you can be successful in. We'd support any member in that way.
Yeah, one other thing that comes to mind is just how, you know, how cannabis helped build the prison industrial complex, mostly on Black people being criminalized for using cannabis, growing and selling cannabis, and just how that history is so fraught with how, you know, it's essentially like a strategy of structural racism to criminalize cannabis. And it seems kind of redemptive almost that you're focusing on cannabis in this way to kind of try to make a avenue for Black farmers to be profitable. Did the history of it play into your decision or like your thinking about it? Or was it just more thinking through what kind of crops could be profitable?
Yeah, definitely the history had an impact. And I'll say it was, what I found was that the history is really complex, and I like the way you broke it down, Chuck, but it has so many nuances to it, right? Because I don't know any Black person, farmer or not, who has not been impacted by the prison industrial complex, either themselves or through a relative, okay? And mostly because of some sort of nonviolent drug offense are most of the people that I know. I have brothers, you know, people who I know who have been impacted by this directly. I know about it and I keep awareness of it. It's a very painful part of that trauma conversation, quite frankly, because of the impact of sort of even the ongoing impact. I'll just give you one quick note. I was in the Black Canna Conference 2 weeks ago with Toy Hutchinson, who is the senator of Illinois, who's working specifically around the criminal justice issues in cannabis in Illinois. And she found just in 2020 that there were 70,000 people of color who were eligible for the exemption to grow cannabis but didn't have it, meaning that they weren't able to get a license to grow cannabis because they didn't meet the federal criteria of not having a drug offense in the last 10 years. But because of the nature of their drug offense, those 70,000 people were actually eligible for an exemption, but they didn't get it, and they couldn't participate on the business side of cannabis because of that. The criminal justice issues around cannabis are enormous, and they are just as sad as the Black farmer policy issues in the USDA. They work hand in hand, really, to create that trauma complex that Black people have in agriculture. And so, yes, that is a part of the informing of, you know, the organization of the 40-acre co-op. It is a whole nother huge issue around criminal justice because that directly speaks to the access around cannabis, right? Because people with that, you know, within that 10-year drug charge window automatically are excluded. And just so how does that happen? So while those 70,000 people were excluded, do you know just in October in Illinois, $100 million was made off of the legal cannabis business. How is that? How is that in October, $100 million was spent? I wonder who that went to if most of the Black folks couldn't get licenses to grow. It's really an interesting dynamic. And it is sad. And it is part of our work. We hope to be able to have the capacity to deal with sort of the regulatory and policy issues around that. We hope to be positioned, I'll just be frank, in Minnesota specifically, we think that 40 Acre or members of the 40 Acre should be one of the first ones who get a license to grow and cultivate a medical marijuana once it becomes legal in the state of Minnesota. We feel like we'd be best positioned because of our experience with hemp, but we know that because of the racial issues that exist in Minnesota, there's only 2 white companies that are licensed to cultivate and grow. And it's been like that for the past 3 years. And it probably, who knows what will change in the state of Minnesota, but it is because of that, the criminalization of Black people with cannabis. I'm just going to say one more thing because the issue has, I'm passionate about it. When we first started the 40 Acre Co-op in Northern Minnesota, we had one investment check that was 5 figures. It was pretty high. So we opened up a bank account here in Northern Minnesota and didn't know, I didn't know how demonized I would be in association with hemp. I never even said medical marijuana. I didn't say marijuana. I just said hemp. I didn't even say CBD. The bank first thought that this investment check was, they accused me of check fraud. So instead of the typical 5 days that they put a business hold on these type of checks, they did 15 days for me. And then just because they were super suspicious, they added another 5 days. So that was just the first part.
Oh, man.
By the time the 15 days was up, I received another check from this investor. It was larger than the first one. So that bank then decided that I was trafficking, and they told me that they didn't want to hold my money and that they were reporting me. Okay. So the criminalization around hemp and cannabis in Minnesota specifically is a real thing. We have a long way to go in the Midwest to undo that specific rhetorical programming that specifically criminalized Black people around the plant. It was longstanding. I talked to branch managers and I tried to have and business bankers at this particular co-op credit union, and they all treated me like I was a criminal because I had a large donation and I was related to hemp. So we have a long way to go with this conversation. We're just kind of scratching the surface, honestly, with the 40 Acre Co-op. And that's why probably I'm so bold and aggressive in getting the education and the information out. I take every opportunity to educate and talk about this issue because specifically in Minnesota, my hometown where I was born, my mom was born, my grandma was born, and my great grandma was born, that I am seen as a criminal. I have a law school education. I am a mother and a grandmother, and they told me that I was trafficking drugs across the country just by looking at me. So, and I'm just a woman. I mean, just think of, you know, the young Black male that has to deal with this issue. It's very complex and it fuels our mission. And it's the reason why we're here. And I just really appreciate you guys giving us the space to have this conversation. There is so much more that we can talk about, but I'm just glad to be able to communicate this to the general public, to people who are interested in co-ops, to people who are active in the agricultural space. We have a lot of change that we need to make in the space. And I just thank you guys for supporting our conversation today.
Thanks to Kelly Maynard from the UW Center for Cooperatives for partnering with us to produce these episodes. And thanks again to Angela Dawson and Kef Raku. Make sure to check out 40 Acre Co-op online to find ways to support their work. And thank you for listening to the Moses Organic Farming Podcast. And remember to register for the Growing Stronger Collaborative Conference. Moses educates farmers in sustainable and organic agriculture. Call the Organic Answer Line to ask a specialist about organic farming and certification at 888-90-MOSES or visit mosesorganic.org/ask. Register now for the Growing Stronger Collaborative Conference at bit.ly/growingstronger2021. If you have questions about today's episode or have ideas for future episodes, please contact me at chuck@mosesorganic.org. Our theme song is Summer Fields by The Tenements. Thanks again for listening.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to say hi.
Okay.
Hi.